In this week's episode of Zen Founder, Sherry sits down with Evgeny Chebotorov, who is the founder of 500px.com, which is a stock photo website that has grown very quickly and is popular in the startup space. Sherry and Evgeny dive deep into mental health and self-care, and they talk a lot about his unique experiences. He's originally from Moscow, and he began photography in 2002, became inspired by it, and in 2004, he created a community for photographers to meet that later morphed into 500px. And if you've been enjoying Zen Founder and you'd like to support us and help us continue producing the show, head to supportzenfounder.com. We have a Patreon set up where you can make either a one-time donation or support the show on an ongoing basis and help us continue talking about founder mental health, founder self-care, and balancing startup, family, and life.
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Zen founder.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other would both get value from the episode.
Well, first of all, would you just say a little bit about who you are and your company? You're the founder of 500px, is that correct?
It is correct, yeah. It's something that I started as a hobby in 2004 while still at university. So basically, I had no idea what I'm doing, and I had no idea if it's going to be that big or if I'm going to, you know, keep doing that. But I was a little bit bored at school while studying business, and I figured that I just want to do something that I'm passionate about. And I got into photography a couple of years prior to that. So it was something, you know, something of a passion of mine. And I just wanted other people to share this passion to and with. And, you know, it's been a hobby until maybe 2009 or so when I met up with my partner and we decided that we're going to relaunch it as a business, which came under unfortunate circumstances because I was just fired from my job before that. And I came from a place and I decided that I don't want to work for anybody else ever again. So that's why it was kind of like...
I've heard that story before.
Yeah, it was kind of like an emotional thing, and because the whole team was let go on one day and it just wasn't nice, I guess. And, you know, just kind of like being own boss in a way was something that I was looking forward to. And so we decided, you know, that we got together and just started working on 500px out of coffee shops and like each other's apartments and so on. It's just kind of like it took 7 years to get there where we are today.
Fantastic. And you are currently the CEO, correct?
No, actually, I'm not. So,
oh, okay.
Fun fact: I've never been the CEO of my own company. And currently, we have sort of like a professional CEO that came from the investor's background and other startups. His name is Andy, and my role has been kind of like I switched, I think, 5 or 6 different roles while being in the company, from product, so like being in charge of all the products that we do, to being the operating officer, so doing kind of like dealing with all the daily stuff, taxes and lawyers and hiring and all that kind of stuff, which I hated and loved at the same time. You know, kind of like you get the thrill of something's going really wrong. And my latest thing that I've been doing is kind of like what we call evangelist. So basically being the face of the company, talking to photographers, figuring out where the world of photography is going and how it's changing, and organizing different marketing events around that. So basically community engagement and marketing. That's something that I felt the most, I guess, calm and peaceful at, just because it's something where you deal with almost like your friends mostly, for most part, I guess. Yeah, but that's a startup, right? So, like, you know, you mentioned that you've been with kind of like helping different startups, and that's the thing. Like, when you grow, you just have different roles that you have to do, and they change, and you have to adapt. And that's basically kind of like the jack of all trades. And I'm horrible at each one of those, but, like, you know, you kind of have to do it because there might not be anybody else to do that.
Well, one of the reasons that we are, you know, talking today is because of the recent article that you wrote about founder mental health. And just in your, you know, introduction of all of the roles that you've been in your job, I can't help but wonder how you have managed the stress of all of those different kinds of tasks and needing to be that flexible and adjust so often when the stakes are so high.
I don't think it's easy. And I guess that's why I wrote it, because a lot of people, you know, you kind of only have this inside perspective and the outside perspective. And I guess kind of like that's the key thing of the article and kind of like my thinking, is that when you talk to founders and you talk to outsiders and they ask you how things are going, the answer is always great. You know, it's like, it's amazing, you know, we are killing it, and so on and so forth. But when you talk to your closest friends or some other startup founders where, you know, where you can share the kind of like the real story, it's never, I guess it's never rosy. So there's always something going on, either like, you know, there's a lawsuit or a key employee leaves the company, or you just lost a major contract, or, you know, there's like bugs in the app or something like this. So something that kind of like keeps you up at night, and some things are within your control and you're frustrated that you cannot fix them fast enough, or sometimes things are outside of your control and obviously you just cannot do anything about that and you feel kind of like in the limbo in a way.
So you have these two versions of yourself, the public self that's sticking to the line of we're killing it, everything's fantastic, and then you have what's really going on inside and the stresses of working in a startup day to day and all of the things that can go wrong and change and be unpredictable.
Yeah. And it's not just me. It's basically, you know, everybody, because startup seems like kind of like a, you know, sexy new game that it's cool to be entrepreneur again, I guess. Almost like, you know, you fake it until you make it. You have to portray the success that you want to achieve even before you have it for real. And some people can play it better than others, that's for sure. But still, it's something that I personally don't appreciate, that kind of set of rules that are out there. And that's why I talk honestly with my friends, and I decided to talk honestly on the internet and not just kind of like, hey, you know, this is another Medium article that people are sharing, but just kind of like something that makes me more vulnerable in a sense, and something that just kind of like hopefully will resonate with some others that are going through similar things.
One of the things that you talked about in your article, which is maybe almost another layer here. I mean, you talked about that, the public self of faking it till you make it, having that hype and persona, you know, to the world at large. And then in your article, you talk a lot about the internal battle, like the questions that circulate in your head about, are you doing the most that you can? Are you helping your team? Are you growing well? You know, all of the questions that circulate in your mind that you might not talk to other people about very much.
Yeah, it is also coming from the same kind of like from the same source, I guess. You know, in a sense, like you want only the best for your company, for your team, hopefully for yourself. And sometimes the best things may not be kind of like you leading the teams, for example. And I guess that's why I've never had the CEO role in my own company. And sometimes it means letting people go who are your friends. And sometimes it means kind of like stepping away a little and letting people do the things, even if you think they're not doing the best job, but they're doing the best that they can, and letting them kind of like learn on their own, I guess.
Like being patient with people.
Yeah, being patient. I'm, you know, at least I used to be a lot really impatient. And I would be like, okay, we need to do this, you know, today. We need to do it like in an hour. And then I would get a lot of pushback from the team. And that's when I started realizing that my style is very different from other people's style. So like when the team becomes bigger and bigger, you have to really articulate what you want to do and how you want to do this, instead of just kind of like, okay, you know, I know everything, just follow me, basically. because that's how leadership evolves, by helping people understand the real cause and the real kind of like goals and letting them achieve them on their own, instead of kind of like just being impatient and doing things yourself instead of letting other people do their jobs.
Right, which is stressful as a leader to maybe watch things flounder for a little bit or watch people learn rather than try to take over and do everything as fast as you can, which is of course not sustainable, but it might feel better in the moment.
Exactly. And that's, there's been a few books on that. This is like one of the key issues that startup founders face, because it's hard for them to let go, kind of like to let go the control. But when you're a team of two or five, it's easy to have the control. But when you're a team of, we're close to 100 people now, when you're a team of 100, you cannot have a control. You know, you cannot control everything that's happening in the company. You cannot even talk to all of the people on a weekly basis anymore, right? Because there's just so many people, so many things going on that you just have to trust that they do their best and that they have the same interest in their heart as you do.
One of the lines of your article that really stood out to me, it's right after you sort of list some of the questions that go on in your head. And you say, the list of questions goes on and on. It's all happening in my head. And the answers go from solid, enthusiastic yes to a depressing no in a matter of hours or days. And it just struck me how difficult it is as a founder to have a solid way to evaluate how you're doing, like who you are, how your company is, because it sounds like it shifts so fast. And sometimes you feel really solid about something, and then as you write, within hours or days, you feel like you're failing.
Yeah. There's a lot of things going on. If you're, for example, a designer, right, you're concerned with design and you just want to do kind of like that well. But as a part of the leadership team, you have some things that you know that you may not want to share with the team yet. So for example, like, I don't know, a loss of a big client, right? For example. And then like, do you tell them right away, or do you wait until kind of like people are less stressed or done with their tasks to tell them that? Or do you try to get the client back and then tell them that, hey, we lost them, but we got them back? So like, there's a lot of things that are moving really fast. And sometimes it doesn't make sense to share something. Same as we talked about before, when there's like external side and internal side. So there's a lot of things that are happening only in my head and just kind of like other management team's heads.
Why do you think it's so hard for founders to talk about mental health?
Because it's not kind of like, it doesn't come from a position of strength. So it's something where, you know, there's an image that you have to be successful. And if you're successful, then you cannot have drawbacks, you know, and then you're like the best image of you and not like a real image of you. And obviously that's kind of like fault, right? It's faulty assumption. And like, everybody has their dark sides and their good sides, and they're different with their friends, they're different with their families, they're different with their competitors. And just not like, it's not something that I guess like our clients would be happy to share, you know, that article or something like that. I don't know if they read it or not, but it's just something that, I don't know, just not talked about often enough, I guess.
Do you think it would be helpful if it was talked about more? I mean, I'm assuming that since you're writing about it, but how do you think that would change kind of the startup world if it became more acceptable to talk about vulnerability or talk about things that aren't going well?
Well, I think the kind of like the sad part that is, doesn't affect just the founders and not just the startups, right? There's a lot of people with, you know, regular jobs that experience either depression or kind of like the same questions. So that happens not just to like a high stressful job. That happens everywhere. And a lot of people reached out to me and they said, like, that's great that you're writing about that, because we feel the same. And we kind of like, it's hard to find connection, especially people who know me, so that they have the connection, they know who I am, they know kind of like who I am in real life, but still being inside my head. So that was kind of like a chance for them to see what's going on there. And I think a lot of them really appreciated that I did write about that.
Yeah, it sounds like you're talking about something that is a much more common experience, right? I think some of the recent statistics on this estimated that up to like 30% of founders experience some mental health difficulty, whether it's depression or ADHD. And that's higher than the general population. You know, that's a big chunk.
Yeah, it's fairly common. And I have obviously a lot of friends who are founders as well. And we have kind of like informal dinners where we share our almost like weaknesses and problems and stuff like that. So yeah, there's a lot of going on, a lot of pressure that is on the shoulders of those people. And I think it's okay to kind of like ask for help, if it's just an advice or some kind of like physical help or some psychological help. It's just, you know, if it makes people better, I think it shouldn't be stigmatized, and actually just should be the opposite, where we realize that there is those issues and we realize that helping people to overcome those issues and kind of like will make them happier people and will make everybody around them more happier as well and make them better human beings overall.
Yeah, it's sort of a no-brainer. And, you know, I think it's also a very utilitarian, practical approach. If something's not going well, you make whatever adjustment you need to fix it or to help it be better, whether that's seeing a therapist or taking medicine or having a mastermind group or having a group of friends that you get together with every week and just talk about how hard it is. I mean, there's lots of strategies to help it feel not so hard. And some of those you talk about in your article. Friends is obviously a really important one for you. Meditation, breathing, yoga, and exercise. Games like play, walking, moving. And I think those are all really important ways to help get out of the chaos of your head and into your body, into relationships, into like other ways of experiencing the world.
Exactly. Yeah. Because, you know, especially after a hard day, I would notice that I would just be so exhausted. I would just go home and sit on the couch. Not even watching anything, just kind of like sit on the couch or endlessly browse Facebook and like not be like, it doesn't add to happiness for sure, right? And just feeling kind of like lonely and at home, and kind of like it's definitely kind of like drags the problem even further. And I started noticing that obviously when you go out, when you have friends or games or meditate, you just become more content or more happy. And obviously that's a no-brainer, right? But it's something that you start realizing those signals and you're like, okay, maybe I should invest in my friends and we should kind of like, I should emotionally and mentally invest in my friends more, make them happier, think about them more. And I'm sure that they would do the same in return because they would feel happier.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer, but it's one of those things that I think is a little bit, I guess, maybe against the founder style, right? To be more interdependent instead of autonomous, or to be more open instead of that external self.
Well, yeah, we read a lot about people who are boasting that they work 80 hours a week and they neglect their families and friends and like never see them and stuff like this. And, you know, there's that. And on the other hand, there is kind of like people in Europe who have slightly better kind of like lifestyle choices. And I think there is probably never a perfect answer for everyone, but Americans work really hard and Canadians are kind of like, you know, close behind. But it's something you realize that, you know, in the end of the days, probably if you're going to die soon, you're not going to say like, I wish I would spend more time at the office. You know, I didn't spend enough time working. It probably would be other things. It probably would be being sad that you didn't spend enough time with the family or friends or traveling or something like that. So in the end, human connection is probably the most important thing that happens to people anyway.
And I think there's a lot of research to support that. You're right on.
Probably just common sense as well.
Right, right. We always have to research things right. With common sense, though. It gives people like me a job.
Yeah.
Since podcasting is not terribly lucrative. So you're getting ready to move from Canada to China. And I guess I'm just curious what that's going to be like in terms of your friendship network and how you're feeling about that transition in terms of your own mental health.
Yeah, no, it is a big change and something that's going to happen. There's not a lot of friends there, I would say there's zero. But what I think is important is that being in a new environment will open me up to really, really expedite learning. So it's something where you have to learn the culture, the language, people, and like simple things like how to navigate the subway system, you know, like basically just kind of like dropping myself in a new environment and making sense of that. And I think the best thing that it will happen is it will stimulate the brain to think differently, to create different ideas, to look, you know, with fresh set of eyes on the existing problems and stuff like that. And I don't know what's going to happen, but it's just what I think might happen while I'm there.
It sounds like it will really wake you up.
That too, yeah. Sort of like, yeah.
Requires all of your focus and senses and capacity for exploration and patience and curiosity and...
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, as people get older, maybe they lose some of that, or when they get into the routine of things, they lose some of that. And, you know, for me, it's when I need to drive to an airport, for example, I don't even think like how I get there. I just get there, you know, you just blank and boom, you're at the airport. So it becomes a routine to get to like places that you go often. And that the same happens at work, same happens elsewhere. And I think it's for just kind of like to have a bit of a jolt and just have a fresh perspective on life, I guess, in general.
Well, I wish you all the best as you get ready for that transition and settle into friendships and a new way of life and new patterns and new adventures.
I hope so, yeah.
Well, anything else you want to comment on about kind of the topic of mental health and founders or any other reflections you want to share with folks?
No, but I think that, you know, everybody has a different path. So some things that, you know, work for me or I found that work for me may not work for others. But what I did find useful is that just kind of like keeping tabs on things that you enjoy doing and keeping tabs on things that make you happier or more content and keeping tabs on things that you do and they make you less happy. You know, like scrolling through Facebook doesn't make you happy. I don't know, but it didn't make me happy. And just kind of like keeping those clues and hopefully recording them somewhere to try to figure out what is the path for you to kind of like feel more in the moment and feel more connected to friends and family around you. And those could be different things, but I feel them when I do some activities.
I love that. I mean, I think that's a really great strategy. And I think one that we've talked about a little bit on the podcast and in other episodes, this pattern of really listening to what is going well and what feels good in your life and then what doesn't, and it, simply tracking that, like one sentence.
Yeah, I think nobody can tell you, you know, do this or live this life or, you know, do that. And I feel like everybody has to figure out for themselves. And that's the best thing, actually, that might happen to people, that they don't have to listen to everything, or they just have to listen to themselves first and foremost. And that gives them, you know, people enough insight into what they like and what they don't like, instead of kind of like listening to experts and be like, oh, yeah, you should do this or you should do that.
There's a lot of wisdom inside each of us already.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's really wise. Yeah.
Hey, well, thanks again for taking the time. And I'm glad we could connect about this. We'll post a link to your article in the show notes. If people are interested in following your adventures across the globe, is there a way for people to keep up with you or learn more about your work?
Oh, my. Yes. I don't even know where it's going to be. Probably on Twitter, maybe.
Or, that's a good starting point.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of photos that I keep posting there and some thoughts and the articles that I'm interested in. So, yeah, probably on my Twitter is a good place to start, I guess.
And what's that handle?
It's my last name. So it's T-C-H-E-B-O-T-A-R-E-D.
Okay, so we'll put that in the
show. Yeah.
For those who spell slower than others.
Yeah, it's a complicated last name. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks so much. And again, best of luck in your big adventures.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care. Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.